Hi folks, Fred Reno here, and welcome to my latest episode of the Fine Wine Confidential Podcast. In this episode, number 16, I interview the brother-sister team at Veritas Vineyards, George Hodson, the CEO and president, and Emily Pelton, the winemaker. However, it's not to discuss Veritas, but to discover the inspiration and vision behind their new wine project called True Heritage. I'm jazzed to share this interview with you because I was struck by how reasonably priced the True Heritage wines were when I first discovered them, and given their high level of quality, they represent a real find. I believe you'll understand once you learn more about the energy behind it when you listen to George and Emily describe their vision and goal for True Heritage. Take a listen. Emily and George, thank you for taking the time to meet with me today.
Our pleasure.
Excited.
Oh, thank you. And I am a big fan of these wines. In fact, I tasted through all of them last week.
Oh, good.
Yeah, at least all that was on the shelf at Wegmans. So let me start. Why True Heritage? What was the inspiration for this? Whose idea? How did this come together?
I think it was one of those that was a function of Emily and I looking at each other and seeing what we felt needed to change about the Virginia wine industry in order to advance the Virginia wine industry. So, like, this really truly began in 2012, 2013. It was us looking at each other, recognizing the fact that we were selling out all of our product in stores, in our tasting room, that we didn't have enough grapes, enough acreage in order to produce enough wine, and also recognizing kind of the nature of the Veritas model would always be self-limiting in those aspects of distribution and having the wine leave the tasting room. It really was a problem-solving discussion. Is how are we going to do this? How are we going to get more acreage? How are we going to get to a price point that is consistent with the rest of the industry? And ultimately, how are we going to get Virginia outside of Virginia?
Yeah, because agritourism is wonderful. We've benefited from it over the years and really grown a following of people that are in and out of the winery and really enjoy visiting and buying their bottles while they're here. But it kind of doesn't go that next step. We always wanted to be in distribution, but we really do sell our Veritas product here.
Right.
And we don't want to sell out so that we can be in distribution. So we really did have to look at next steps and how to create a new project, a new brand that was ultimately for the marketplace, for consumers, so that people could have access to Virginia wine. It's hard to get.
So once the idea springs forward and you start to put structure around it, I'd be curious, did you sit down and say, okay, here's our mission statement. Here's our goal.
We did, yeah. And one of the fundamental things, and it was also part of that first conversation with George and I, wasn't necessarily getting more wine in the marketplace, but it was also regionalizing Virginia wine and Southern food. Everywhere we've been in the world in the wine industry, there's a huge food culture surrounding the wine. And our area didn't grow up with wine. This is a new phenomenon, you know, and a wonderful growth pattern for our region. But we really wanted to start linking in that food and wine culture, partly because we enjoy it so much.
Right.
And partly because it really is sort of the period at the end of the wine sentence. You know what I mean? It's the whole story.
Yeah.
It's how you bring people together and how you share food and share wine. And that's the beauty of this industry. So it seemed like a good, we didn't want to go into distribution in the whole entire United States. It seemed overwhelming. So we really just kind of picked our food region.
Okay. So you started out with the idea that it would be regionality and it would also help promote the wine region of Virginia, essentially, which is all real sound idea. I mean, it's great. It's a great idea. Then the next step is, okay, where do we get grapes?
Exactly.
How did that, George, I mean, how did that manifest itself? And, you know,
that was the 3 or 4 years in between the idea and the actuation.
I mean, it's a tough thing to do because, you know, you have to be patient in the wine industry. And ultimately, from inception to a bottle of wine, you know, you have 3 to 5 years. But we also, you know, had to find the right partners who were sharing the vision of the brand. And so finding people who were able and willing to plant vineyards on their properties and then participate in this brand in a way that went beyond kind of a grower relationship and really kind of went into a partner relationship, which is what's unique about this project, is that the vineyards that are involved in this project are participating in the brand with us.
So Castalia Farms,
yep,
and Ben Coolin,
yep,
Farm. So they are basically partners in this endeavor, and they planted their property specifically for this project.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. Yep.
And then we also have this other layer, which kind of happened on accident, but you know, as we were looking at it, we always had an eye to the history of the region and how much historical breadth we have. And we realized we were starting to put these old, beautiful estates, farmland estates, back into agriculture. I realized what a wonderful story that is, too. And we've always had our family story to tell here at Veritas.
Right.
And it was really nice to start having that sort of family story of these estates and how we can reintroduce agriculture back into these estates and also tell the story of the land and our region.
How did you zone in on the Keswick area? Because that's where these two properties are located. There must have been something in the soil, in the terroir there, if you will, that you saw that said, hey, this would be a great part to start.
I've always wanted to grow grapes out in Keswick.
And also, and then also the nature of those farms as well. There's a continuity there that a lot of other, you know, Monticello is a very large AVA. So what we wanted to really try to do is hyper-focus on a region that had a lot of consistency. And so while we want to have, you know, these farms contribute each of their own identity to the wine and have a little bit of complexity with different sites, but in the same respect, we can also farm them in a very similar way as we continue to build that out. And we've got two farms involved now. We've got another one that is in the process of preparing to plant right now. And we have a third farm. So right now we have four participating farms contributing grapes to the label. And we hope to see it continue to grow.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And the Keswick area will allow us to do that because there is, you know, so many large farms still intact.
And the Keswick corridor follows the Southwest Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very similar, well, very different in terroir, but very similar aspect in that, you know, you're going up in elevation into the Southwest Mountains. Very similar to a lot of what you see in this area in Monticello, right against the Blue Ridge.
Well, one of the first things I noticed when I had the True Heritage Chardonnay for the first time was what I say, call a solidity that I had not tasted in most Virginia Chardonnay, and it reminded me of a project I had done myself back in California.
Well,
and then when I was up at Keswick Vineyards with you and Stephen, and he had pulled out his latest vintage of Chardonnay, and I picked up that salinity in that Chardonnay, and I thought, oh, there really is some terroir. There is some component here that's, because, you know, this farm is right down the road from
right.
Keswick.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
And so there's some real uniqueness there. This is not just a commercial endeavor. There is definitely uniqueness to these sites and what you're doing.
Absolutely. And that's my highest elevation planting of grapes in Keswick, that Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. It's right up at the very top of...
What is the elevation there at Castalia?
I'm not going to say.
Relatively speaking.
Well, what is it, 600?
Yeah.
No, I'm 900.
Okay, well, I mean, you're getting up. You
at
have
that,
to get
at that Chardonnay, I'm 900.
Yeah. That kind of elevation.
But that's nice, too. I mean, the difference is... I mean, our relative elevation is beautiful. Everything is below us on the vineyards. And that's all that really matters, you know, how high you are. As long as the air has somewhere else to go is the most important part. So we have that there. But it did give me chest pains planting over there at lower elevations because I'm used to 900 being my lowest. It's worked out really well.
And actually, our next planting is going to be at 1300 to 1400.
Oh, fantastic.
So we're going up.
We're creeping up the mountain as we go.
Yeah, that's great. What drove the decision from the standpoint of, okay, these are the varietals we're going to focus on?
History, just what I have, what, you know, as a family we have experience with, what's done well, what's doing well in the marketplace, what has promise for long-term viability within our growing region. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel by any means, And, you know, we've got such good energy behind Viognier Petit Verdot and Cab Franc in Virginia. Just wanted to continue that story. I have a lot of ideas as we move forward as far as planting the seeds and really introducing people to Virginia wine. I wanted it to be consistent with what I have around me.
So my business math tells me that your capacity is close to 15,000 cases right now. Is that about accurate, given the grape availability?
Yeah, approaching that neighborhood, yeah. And with that case production, what we're trying to do, as Emily just mentioned, is limiting the number of SKUs. And I think that, you know, one of the assets...
Just learned that there are UPCs.
UPCs, yes.
SKUs.
Yeah.
SKUs.
You know, one of Virginia's greatest assets is how young we are and how much experimentation is going on.
Right.
And that's a great thing. And we really love the fact that we're having debates about Tannat and people bringing in different varietals. But, you know, one of the things, in order to be commercially viable, we have to tighten that up and say, okay, this is what we can be known for. And the nice thing about these varietals that we're using is that we're not competing with a market space that's completely mature and completely saturated. We're not going up against Cab Sauv from Napa Valley.
Right.
We're bringing forward what we have done over the last 40 years, 20 years here at Veritas, and being able to produce something that's unique and marketable.
It grows really well here.
Yeah.
Well, no,
it actually fits. It wasn't like, what else can we plant
right.
other than Cab Sauv? We did try Cab Sauv.
No, wine growing, you have to obviously be specific to your site
and
choose. But the idea, what you just said, is really important, George. Focus.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you want to turn this into a larger brand offering, if you will, on a more regional and national basis. The consumer has to be able to say, True Heritage, what do they make?
Right.
And they have to gravitate immediately to, in their mind, that's what they make. Okay. That's what it is.
And if you think of every wine region in the world, you're going to go to a grape. You know, whether it's Marlboro, whether it's Napa, whether it's Sancerre.
It pops in your head.
That grape
you can't even help it.
And Virginia doesn't have that yet. And you know, I mean, we're putting forth our opinion on what it should be. That's not to marginalize, you know, all of those other efforts, because, you know, we're doing the same thing. But to use the word you just used, focus, is we're really trying to create that identity. So that people can know who we are, what we're doing, be able to see a wine on a shelf and be able to have that pop the way we do with every other wine region.
I'm assuming the wine is produced here at Veritas, which is great because
yep.
you have capacity.
And sorry, I'm shaking my head on a podcast.
You know, it is what it is. How large do you see this? I mean, what do you think commercially? And that's not a dirty word. I think it's a great word. If you can make high quality wine in tens of thousands of cases, which a lot of producers do, that's what you need to do to get that nationality, if you will.
Well, and every step we take towards that improves our ability to do it better, more cost effective. And so it's really, we're graduating into what the majority of the wine world is doing. You know, I mean, if you only drank what you bought at a winery, you know, you would be very limited. And so, you know, I think we do have a pretty long runway on where we want to take this brand in terms of production levels. We have a lot of land that's available in the Keswick corridor, which is one of the reasons we chose that area for development. And we already have production space available to us. So all the pieces are coming together in a way, you know, when we've taken the time that we have, you know, of nearly 7 years as we've built out this project, we've kind of planned on these things. And so our hope is to take it to a significant size and one that is relevant on the regional, national, and international stage.
And we've just been planting every year, anywhere from 20 to 30 acres a year.
Okay.
I think we're at 60 acres in production and almost 100 in the ground for True Heritage.
So tell me about your naming and your branding. That must have been an interesting roundtable.
Sure.
How did this all come together?
Well, and you know, I mean, it's been a dynamic conversation. You know, obviously we start with True. And so that is linking to Veritas. And so Veritas, obviously, Latin for truth. And so we wanted to make sure that we were linking back to the legacy brand of Veritas. And so what we wanted to do then is bring in that larger conversation of what this area is. What we're really working towards is partnering with that food culture and the really broad spectrum of influences that this area has, that food culture has, that all of the stories of this region, you know, are contributed to by so many cultures, so many people, so many places that it's come together. And so we want to honor the work that's been done with the wine over the last 40 years. So that's the piece of that heritage. We want to honor the people who have contributed to Southern food culture. And that's from all around the world. That's from, you know,
right.
It came here from somewhere else.
It came here from somewhere else, right?
As we all did.
Yeah, exactly right. And so speaking that culture and that history and that heritage and bringing it together in an inclusive and way that honors and values all those contributors is what we're trying to do.
And what we're excited about.
Yeah.
It's been a really fun evolution.
What was the first vintage?
2017.
Was it a range of wines, or did you have less of varietal at that time?
It was three wines, Chardonnay, Viognier, Petit Verdot, from our first planting, which was 8.5 acres.
It's a heck of a year to start, though, right?
It was a great year.
It was a great year, and you know, our portfolio hasn't changed much, even though a lot more varietals have come on. We still kept it that focused with Petit Verdot, Chardonnay, Viognier, and then a blend.
Well, the blend, I have my refrigerator. I've been enjoying it over the last four nights, having a glass of, I mean, a Viognier Petit Mansang blend is terrific.
Yes.
That is really wonderful, delicious wine.
Thank you so much. Know? I think they complement each other's.
No question.
It's like what the Viognier is missing, the Petit Mansang has, and what the Petit Mansang has too much of, the Viognier helps to kind of balance it.
Well, and what I like to do in that situation is get a glass, cap it, just put in a refrigerator and taste it over three or four nights and watch how it evolves. Mm-hmm. And that wine has done nothing but blossom and get richer without losing its structural components.
Wonderful.
It's, you know, and it's 18.
Yeah,
which
I know.
Was a,
I was just thinking to myself.
Which, you know, everybody says it was a difficult year. Well, you have difficult years. It's called farming, right?
Yes.
Right. Yep. I mean, it is what you're going to deal with. And the fact that you could make the high quality wine that you did speaks to the vineyard, speaks to your talents, and also speaks to the region, quite honestly, that even in a difficult year, it can produce high-quality wine. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, and what you're doing here excites me because when I talk to people, and have talked to people before I came here to Virginia about Virginia wine around the country, and people know, air quotes, everything about wine,
right.
And I talk about Virginia, and they'd look at me like I was crazy. And then I would taste lots of Virginia wine, and the overwhelmingly the response was always the same. I had no idea.
Yep. I had one experience, and I'll try and be sure.
Please,
short,
go ahead.
Just
no.
A story. I was doing an event, and they didn't really introduce me or us or the group that was pouring, and it was all Virginia wines. You know, it was a larger brand that had people from all over the United States to this dinner, and I was kind of annoyed that nobody knew it was Virginia wine, but we went through it, and at the end I went around to every guest and said, you know, hi, we're from Virginia, and they're like, Virginia? And they, it's almost nicer that they just took it blind and was like, this is fantastic, instead of having Virginia first and then being like, well, this is good for, it was kind of the other way around. And they were so pleased, and so they enjoyed the wine so much and were really excited when they found out that it was local for them.
To me, there's a soul in these wines from Virginia that is missing these days out of most California wine. Primarily because they de-alk most of that. Mm-hmm. And anytime you go through that process, you're stripping the soul right out of the wine.
But I also think it was a learning process too, right? Because at the end of the day, the winemakers, especially, you know, the modern era of Virginia wineries started in, you know, late 70s.
Right.
And, you know, I think that a lot of people's first impression of Virginia wine is when they were trying to be California. Right, like we're the same continent, we should try and do the same thing. And I think that that's what has really been learned. The Virginia winemakers who are doing the best things are recognizing the soul of Virginia, and recognizing, yeah, we do have bad vintages. We do have rain.
Challenging
vintages. And so they do what, you know, I mean, not every wine region in France is absolutely perfect. And, right. and they respond to it, and the viticulture responds, the winemaking responds, and then you have something that's an authentic expression of the place. And that's what we're trying to do with Virginia wine. And not just us, not just True Heritage, Early Mountain, you know, King family, everybody is saying, okay, we are who we are. We're comfortable with that now, and putting forward a product that reflects that. And then that's why people are now interested in it, because we're not trying to be something else.
Being true to our roots.
Yes. And we're being a wine that speaks to the region. And that's what wine consumers want. They want something that is unique, and they want something that has a soul to it, as you just said. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're trying to do and take out of Virginia and share with the rest of the world.
How have your efforts gone so far to get distribution outside of Virginia?
We just started.
Yeah.
No,
so,
I recognize that, but
we really were starting to launch our distribution initiative in March of 2020. And so...
Not very good timing.
Not a great time. and obviously, you know, distributors' books are closed right now. The on-premise market has effectively been closed for the last year. We've done as well as you could possibly do in a global pandemic. But I think that now we're really starting to hit our stride. We're picking up additional states, and there's a great level of interest there. But, you know, we're pacing ourselves, understanding that the books aren't open. People are not taking on new products. And so we're lining it all up. Right now we're in Virginia, Maryland, D.C., Florida. We're picking up Tennessee, South Carolina, and Georgia.
That's terrific.
In the next handful of months, yeah.
That's terrific. Yeah, no, COVID timing, right?
Right.
You know, I'd hate to be in the restaurant business. You are here at Veritas. I can't even imagine how difficult that must be.
Yeah.
You know,
we're lucky to have space, though. That was our blessing.
Yeah.
Just the physical outside space for guests.
Yeah. So, Emily, your general philosophy about wine growing, wine making, you started making wine here in 2004. Was that your first vintage?
2001 was my first vintage.
Oh, it was? Okay.
But I worked alongside my father. But 2004 or 5, I became sort of the sole, the head winemaker.
So you cut your teeth producing wine only in Virginia.
That's correct.
And making wine only in Virginia. You must be...
I'm really proud of that, actually.
Yeah, in fact, you must be a rare person in that regard. Mm-hmm. when I look at the landscape, because a lot of the winemakers I see here in Virginia are anything but from Virginia, and in a lot of cases, even this country.
That's correct. That is correct. My colleagues are definitely from all over and have had a lot more geographical experience making wine in other regions. For a little while, I kind of felt like I wanted to go do that and explore other regions. Right now, where I am, is I love kind of my hyper-focus of really having sort of grown up with these varietals, really learned so much about each one of these grapes and how they perform here in these soils, that I'm very thankful for that ability to not have any sort of fuzz from, well, you know, I used to do this here and I used to do that there. I've only learned what I've done and what I do from what I have. And that's been a long road of trial and error.
What's the collegiality like during this last 20 years you've been making wine here, as far as sharing ideas and problems and troubles? And
absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Could not have made the progress that I've made as a winemaker here in Virginia without all my other colleagues. We share ideas, we experiment together. We've set up a research exchange where we each do projects in-house and then bring them back to the table, and actually have managed to get state funding for that as we grew it. And it's become a huge part of sort of our culture, our industry, and bringing the whole Commonwealth together, because, you know, Monticello is obviously what I know the most about, but there are so many other distinct regions in the Commonwealth of grape growing that are very different to what I experience. So it's been nice to be able to talk to winemakers from Northern Virginia and really understand their challenges, which are different than mine. But we are all sharing as much information as possible in order just to learn more about winemaking in Virginia. All of the literature is not about Virginia, so we have to make our own literature and kind of build our own techniques and really start looking at each other and asking each other why. Why are we farming like this? Why are we, you know, why are we using this certain technique in the cellar? Why? And really figuring out what we can do that's more specific for our grapes and our region and our phenolic ripeness.
Well, one of the things that you are doing ties to something that was said to me early on when I first moved here by one vintner who said, Fred, I think some of the best vineyards in Virginia haven't even been planted yet. Mm-hmm. And I believe what you're doing currently in Keswick is proving that.
Yep.
That Virginia's best vineyards may be still way ahead of us, and there's so much potential quality evolution yet to come.
Absolutely, and it's so exciting. I mean, even down to our True Heritage project, we're planting right now. In our first 5 years, we were planting what was available, but I was always kind of looking up at the top of that mountain and kind of, you know, saying, but what I'd really like to plant is up there. And,
you right.
know, in the years as we progress, you know, our partners start to hear what I'm saying. And so now we're into a position where we can clear some land that is, you know, where I'm like, that's plant. And it's really exciting.
You sound like
it's
your
really
father
exciting.
When he was talking about top metal.
Yes,
being
oh, same. Absolutely, exactly the same. It took us 10 years to plant our best site here at Veritas to have that cleared and ready for vineyard production. And we've only had two or three vintages off of it in so far. So yes, you're exactly right. You know, as we learn and as we experiment and as we move into some of the premier sites, which are more challenging to farm and get to, but I can see it. I can see where they are.
Well, that's fascinating. What do you see? The Monticello AVA is a large AVA, as a lot of these are in Virginia, but how does it differ as far as the character of the grapes, let's say from Northern Virginia up in Middleburg AVA and things like that? What do you see? Just what's the distinct differentiation?
Physiologically, you know, we have bud break 2 weeks earlier than they do.
Okay.
So just from, if I was a vine and I was telling you what the difference is, we're just warmer down here. Everything kind of pops out a little bit earlier. And so our growing season has just shifted a little bit from them. So you see different varietals do better in the south versus the north. You know, Viognier, I find very easy to farm here.
Okay.
Whereas I think most people you speak to in Northern Virginia find it a little more challenging.
Yep.
White blends in this region and our red blends in the Monticello AVA, I think, are just outstanding. And that might be just from that extra 2 weeks of growing time.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're right, the Meritage. Mm-hmm. Wines that come out of this area are distinctive and really lead the pack quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and if you look at, you know, and obviously competitions aren't everything, but if you look at the makeup of the governor's case over the last 10 years, you'll see Central Virginia contributing a significant percentage of the number of wines in that governor's case and the gold medals. You know, we represent about 10% of the wineries in the state of Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know, about 30 wineries are right in this Monticello AVA. But the goals that we have and kind of some of those laurels kind of speak to what we're doing.
Yeah. But they can do a much better Chardonnay than I can up in Northern Virginia, even on the coast.
And again, I hope I didn't sound like I was saying, you know, bragging about it. But I do think that it is, you know, a unique place to grow grapes. And that's why we're leaning into it the way we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And the proof is in the bottle and it's there. I mean, I'm just so excited about Virginia wine and the diversity here, but the quality. In fact, that is the number one thing I try to stress when I talk to trade people around the country and send them wine. I say, listen, I want you to tell me what you think of the quality. Judge us based on quality, because some of the varietals are different, obviously.
Sure.
But big fan of Petit Mansing.
Oh, good.
I love Petit Mansing. I think this is an exciting grape to work with. When they break it down to pure quality, then they start going, oh, I see what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, West Coast palates are different.
Sure.
I find that my experience so far is they understand the Cabernet Franc, but they don't get the Petit Verdot.
Okay.
That I've discovered. But tell me about the quality.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the quality is really good.
Yep.
You know, it's just maybe a little bit too much for them, what they're expecting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is an exciting project. really exciting project. I'm just so happy for you all. This is really cool, and the sky's the limit here.
That's our hope, and we're excited for it too. I think that one of the things about the Virginia culture and the Virginia wine industry, and we've touched on it a couple different times, is that we're trying to support each other. We're trying to all, we are too small of a region to be in competition or anything like that. So this effort is as much about promoting Virginia. Every single winery in Virginia is helping us make a name for it. And so, Emily talked about kind of the collaboration between winemakers. Our hope is that this project is a small piece of advancing the entire industry and making more and more people less surprised when they taste Virginia wine. We would like that reputation to not be one that is a gimmick, or, hey, I'm surprised, oh, they make wine in Virginia? or even worse, thinking that it's going to be some kind of muscadine sweet wine, right? As you just spoke to about quality, we want people to know the level of quality wine that comes out of Virginia. And we hope to be, part of that with this brand and the other brands that we work on.
And what I'm excited about is we're not telling you our story. We're still writing our story. Mm. So I think on your side, I think that's a really fun thing to be a part of.
Exactly.
Remember when ... I love that aspect of where we are in our industry.
Well, Emily and George, I know you've got another meeting coming up here, and I'm glad you can take the time to sit. This is going to be great. This is another wonderful piece of the episode of my journey here in Virginia, trying to discover and to share that discovery with the people at large. And I just want to say thank you.
We enjoyed it. Thank you. Yeah.
Folks, I would highly encourage you to seek out the wines of True Heritage. They represent a new approach in the evolution of Virginia wine growing, and they are not only of high quality, but priced so you can enjoy them regularly. In my upcoming episodes, number 17 and 18, I profile Eileen Sevier, Vice President of Strategy and Marketing at Early Mountain Vineyards, and her winemaker, Ben Jordan. Early Mountain Vineyards produces wines of distinction, and they have garnished an outstanding reputation from those in the know here in Virginia. Well, thank you for being a listener and following my podcast. Hit that subscribe button so you will not miss any upcoming episodes. And if you have any comments or questions, please send them to me at fred@finewineconfidential.com. See you on the other side. Music at Fine Wine Confidential podcast by Jason Shaw at audionautics.com from his copyrighted song Acoustic Shuffle under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License. I hope you enjoyed the show.